You're listening to the Big Guy Fantasy Sports Podcast Network. Welcome to the Nasty Cast.
Hello, welcome to episode 130 of the Nasty Cast Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We're off to a rip-roaring start. We are presented by Dots Pretzels, the greatest pretzels in all of the land. I am Nathan Dockin, who you can hear mumbling and stumbling over his words as the host of this show. You can find me on Twitter if you want to berate me for my lack of talking ability, at Nathan Dockin. And joined today, of course, by Van Lee. What's up, Van?
Yes, thank you for allowing me to join you on your podcast, Popeye.
Is that a good Popeye?
No, but I think it'll do.
I don't know anything else that he says. I was trying to think of something else.
Has anyone ever watched Popeye? I don't know. He's a sailor and he eats spinach, and then Bluto is the bad guy, but that's the extent of my knowledge of Popeye.
Olive oil is his girlfriend.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, that guy who's always eating cheeseburgers.
Wimpy. Right? Oh, yeah, that's
Wimpy.
Right.
Yeah.
I will gladly pay you Tuesday for a cheeseburger today.
Okay, I guess I know a lot about Popeye. Who am I kidding?
There you go. I used to watch that. Ron Rigney, welcome to the show. Did you ever watch Popeye?
I watched the cartoon, but it makes me immediately think of the creepy Robin Williams movie that was just bizarre. I don't know if you guys have seen that early 80s movie, the live-action Popeye, but it's a little strange. But yeah, the cartoon, I was a fan of the cartoon when I was growing up, sure.
You got Shelley Duvall, right?
Yeah.
That's weird. As olive oil,
it's a strange adaptation, yeah, to say the least.
Sounds right up my alley.
You would love it.
I did watch a movie starring Kevin Sorbo this weekend. You know, TV's Hercules of Hercules, yeah. Legendary Journeys. Yeah, time has not been kind to Kevin Sorbo.
Time has not been kind to Shelley Duvall. Did you see that interview?
I haven't. I'll have to check that out.
Ooh, mercy! Looks like. What's that Gollum off the Hobbit? Maybe that's a little harsh. Oh, man. What else is going to say? Oh, yeah. You know, speaking of like weird older movies, I guess this was probably the 90s, but I just happened to flip over to Batman Forever today.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't think I've ever actually seen. Oh, my God. It's so ridiculous. Tommy Lee Jones and Jim Carrey. It's so over the top.
It's not as bad as the next one, though. Did you ever see Batman and Robin?
I don't. Not that I would remember, at least. If I've seen any of it at all, it's been a long time.
It's well regarded.
Wasn't Batman and Robin? Wasn't that Mr. Freeze?
Yes.
See, I like the villains in that one better, but the overall movie is. I don't know. They're neither one of them are.
Perhaps you should chill out. Yeah. Ice to meet you.
Yeah, that kind of crap is going on throughout the whole movie.
See, who's the other villain in that one?
Poison Ivy.
Isn't there two? Yeah, okay. All right. Which one was the controversial one where they gave the bat suit nipples?
That's that one, Batman and Robin. Yeah.
I remember that being a big controversy when that came out.
The nipple controversy.
Yes.
Wow.
Nipplegate.
Nipplegate. I thought that was reserved for that Super Bowl halftime show with Janet Jackson all those years ago.
It was a wild time in the 90s.
Oh, it really was. A lot of flannel. Or those JNCO jeans. Don't tell me you didn't own a pair of JNCO jeans.
I did not. I was one of the few people who did not, and I'm proud that I can say that.
What do you mean owned with an ED?
Yeah. Is that your podcast and pants?
JNCOs? I got them on right now.
Yeah.
Some black ones. So with some Chucks. I got a chain wallet.
Problem is you can't see the Chucks because the pants are too big. They cover them up.
Well, it looks like you're hovering everywhere, though. It's kind of cool.
Oh, man. That's a good image right there.
Well, I mean, we need to kind of point out, too, you know, Nate has a really valid reason for kind of bumbling over his words. He was out rocking out last night. And so you could have very well worn some JNCO jeans to your rock and roll show last night.
I could have. This I probably would have fit in.
Instead,
I throw on my metal
nude
shirt, you know. Yeah. I like to stand out, so. Totally nude. And then I avoid the pat downs. Clearly, they can tell that there's no weapons on my person.
And they're less interested in patting you down, to be honest. So it works out.
Much less. What's your stance on nipples on Batman? Tweet us at NastyCastBGFS. You can also find Van at Manly Van Lee, and Ron is at The Real Made. And also, check out the Fantrax Dynasty Baseball Show. You can now find that as a podcast and podcast version, however you want to say it, pretty much anywhere that you can listen to this. You can also just go to Fantrax and stream it if you so desire. What else? Oh, go to BigGuyFantasySports.com. Check out our written work. And also to purchase Bob Long's 2017 Fantasy Football Consistency Guide and use coupon code NASTYCAST for $1 off of that bad boy. Football season is coming. And, of course, as always, if you will rate and review the podcast on iTunes, give it 5 stars and then tell me how bad I suck at talking. But we will still give you Dots Pretzels for free anyway if you screenshot it and send it to us, because we still love the rate and reviews. So we had an interesting play last night, guys. I kind of wanted to kick off the show with this. We had Austin Jackson ranging back into center field. He, oh God, who did he even rob of that home run? I forget. But he caught the ball. He flipped over the wall in center field and flew out of the field of play, ruling out because he did catch the ball. Although it is interesting, in my opinion, because he left the field. So what do you guys think? Should it be a catch if you actually physically leave the park?
I wonder what the actual rule is. I mean, I don't want to hear it because it's 10 pages, I'm sure. But is it you have to have a majority of your body in play as you catch the ball? Is it your? It's obviously not your feet have to touch the field. Would that be what you were kind of looking at? I don't know. I think it was a catch. I think it's fine. You probably need concrete rules, because if there's going to be something that's questionable, you've made it happen to me.
It's contagious.
Then you want to know what to say. But I mean, this one certainly didn't. I didn't even think about it. And to be honest, I actually want to point this out. I read Nathan sends us synopses of or rundowns of the episodes, and I read this. Should it be a home run if you only catch the ball outside of the park? And for whatever reason, I read that in my brain as you wanted to eliminate the inside the park home run, which I wouldn't know why anyone would ever bring that up. So I was going to, you know, just criticize you for even coming up with that. But obviously, now I understand what it's about.
Inside the park home run is one of the best plays in baseball, in all of sports.
Absolutely.
As a matter of fact.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. I the thing I don't like, if you throw it out there to be debated, like what the rules are and what aren't the rules, I don't want it to be something else that they're going to review and screw up and take more time away from the game and have to deliver it, you know, have a powwow and see, okay, where was he at? Where did he start out at? If you just leave it where it is, because it does make for an exciting play. I mean, a guy's, you know, sacrificing his body to make a grab. It immediately made me think of that one that that Jeter made where he went flying into the stands and he came out and his face was bloody. I mean, that's a play that they're going to show for centuries, you know. It's one of those things that, yeah, I think you just leave it alone. I mean, I'm okay with it if you're starting in obviously, if you're in play, you're leaning over the fence, I don't have a problem with it if you land out, as long as you make the grab, you know, as long as you can clearly see that they made the grab. But I just am afraid that if you open too many of these things up to replay and have somebody in New York watching it on a screen and talking to the umpires, I just think it's opening up the game to, because they talk about the pace of the game already, and I don't have a huge problem with the pace of the game because I think that's just baseball, but I don't want to add anything to it that's going to be, because a lot of times it seems like when I'm watching a game and they replay something, even with the replay, they get it wrong a lot. And I don't want them to get this to be something that's added to that list that they mess up as well. I think they should just leave it alone.
Yeah, if you're going to be bringing in the instant replays and rules and all that crap, then I'm definitely out. That's one of the reasons that I've sort of fallen out of love with football in the recent years, is because of that stupid, ridiculous catch rule that nobody knows what the hell a catch is and what isn't. So please, God, keep that as far away from baseball as possible. But I will say, it does kind of seem like cheating to catch the ball out of the field of play. And it's still, even though your entire body went out, the ball went out of the park, it's still an out. So I don't know. It seems kind of stupid to me. But I think the exception could be, I remember seeing a video online one time of somebody who, and I think this was women's softball even, but she caught the ball right at the wall and completely leveled the wall. Like, the wall just fell over. If you do that, then it's definitely a catch. All right, on to the nudes. I mean news. Sorry. So used to being naked after last night. A lot of photos of me on the internet popping up all of a sudden. Ozzano Albies was called up, boys. Heyo. We just talked about these guys a little bit on the Fantrax Dynasty show, but obviously this is redraft relevant as well. So let's talk about this. Albies, Ozzy, as he is known. What do you guys think about him? Ben, I guess you profiled him the last time. So what's your single season outlook on him, more as opposed to the Dynasty slant?
I still really like him, even just for this single season, because he's going to play. I mean, they're really not going to rest him any more than they normally would any of their players. So he's going to provide value, because I also think he's a really good talent. He's not huge. He's basically 5'9", 160 pounds. He's not going to provide a lot of power, but honestly, in this day and age, power is plentiful. It's easy to find. What he will provide is speed. He was 21 for 23 in stolen bases in AAA this year, and he has really good base running ability and speed, so he's going to help you out a lot there. Maybe a lot of Jimmy Rollins comps for him, and I think that's a really good comp to have, but I also think he has a little less power than that. So this year, look for some stolen bases. To be honest, and I'll ask what you guys think of it, but who would you rather have this season, Yoan Moncada or Ozzy Albies?
Ooh. Hmm. To be honest, I might rather have Albies. I don't know that Moncada is going to be able to control the strikeouts and hit for a decent enough average to get on base and let that speed really profile. Mm-hmm. I have a little bit more confidence in Albies getting on the bases and stealing a little bit more. I'm not expecting a ton of power from either one of them, more so from Moncada, but you know, he's kind of nicked up, we're seeing right now too. He decided to just about take his teammate's head off the other day, ended up getting carted off the field. Looks like he's going to be fine, but yeah, I think the lineup tiebreaker would have me going with Albies too, even though the Braves have certainly cooled off lately, but yeah, I'd go Albies.
I agree.
Yeah, I think so too, because I don't think, honestly, I think in the long term, obviously Moncada is going to hit for way more power, but I think this season, I don't think the power difference is going to be all that great between the two, because we talked about Moncada before, and I think that, you know, we kind of agreed that you're looking at him more for steals this year than you are for power. So obviously Albie's the same way, but yeah, I think it goes without saying that that lineup is way better. I just would like to see the K rate come down a little bit with Albies. He was at 20%. I'd like to see him get back to that 15% he had in AAA the year before in AA. But yeah, I think Albies is the guy I'd go with too.
Very good. All right, Ron, what about Ahmed Rosario, who got called up as well? Albies or Rosario for you?
Honestly, they're about the same for me, really. I think you might get a little bit higher average from Rosario. I mean, he's hit a little bit better at AAA. With the 328, the 367 OBP, he's another guy that it's not so much the strikeouts. I want to see the walk rate go up with him a little bit. But according to Terry Collins, he's going to play. He's going to get a shot at it. I wish he would have before now. He could have helped out a little bit earlier on in the season in yearly formats especially. But if he's going to see the field, he's going to help you in the counting stats. He profiles very similar to Ozzy Albies, but like I said, I think the average is going to be a little bit better, but you're going to get some steals from him. You're going to get some average if they can drive him home. I mean, I'm not real optimistic about that offense, although they do have Jay Bruce and Yoenis Cespedes still there, so he can score you some runs as well. But just it, as always, understand what you're getting with these guys, and you know, if you follow it, you know what you're going to call up or Ahmed Rosario or add him for. You know, you're not going to get a lot of homers, but he could steal you, you know, I don't know, 10 to 15 bases on the high side. He could hit, you know, I don't know if he's going to hit 328 in the majors, but he could hit you, you know, 270, 280. He could hit higher. Who knows? I mean, he's really had a nice season at AAA. He doesn't have a lot to prove. So I think that they're very similar, but I'd almost have to give the nod again maybe to Albies just because of a better lineup. But overall, I think I don't know for the season anyway, but overall I think I'd rather have Rosario because I think he is going to hit you for a higher average, and I think he won't steal maybe as many bases, but I think he's going to be the guy I'd go with long term.
Yeah, it's interesting kind of bringing up those two. Who would you rather take? I think I might go Albies just because of the stolen base, basically the landscape that we have. Albies was 21 for 23 in the minors. Rosario was, I think, 19 for 26. So he got 19 for 25. So he got caught a little more. I think the average, you're right, Rosario is going to have a little more this year, and probably going forward in general. But I think Ozzy Albies can hit for average well enough. He's got a decent enough hit tool. they're both exciting players. And I mean, I'd be happy to have either one on my team, even in just a straight redraft this year. So you're going to get some value. I think you're going to get the steals. You know, in my mind, I always valued Rosario as having more power, but he has not displayed that as compared to Albies in the minors. So I don't know how I feel about that. Rosario is a little bigger, so maybe he can grow into it. But neither one of these guys are really going to, you know, light up the scoreboard as far as home runs go. But they're still really good, valuable players.
Yeah, and one thing, too, that I want to sort of preach caution, praise caution, hallelujah caution about is the Mets AAA affiliate is in the PCL, the Las Vegas 51s, and it's a huge hitting environment, a huge hitters league. And if you look at a 377 BABIP over the course of 94 games so far, that's sort of going to inflate that 328 average. So really, I'm not as sold on Rosario's hit tool being better even this year. So I would go Albies too in that case, which I didn't really think I'd say because I didn't think we'd see him necessarily before, especially before September. So it's, you know, if you're stashing him, then good on you. Enjoy those steals because that's what we really need. And what I really need is some freaking AL players to get called up in the middle of the infield because there is just nobody. My God, my AL-only team is just starved for, like, anything. Jorge Polanco has practically been benched at this point. Like, even I wish I could even trade for somebody like Jose Iglesias, for the love of God. Yuck. Which is really grasping at straws. Yeah, yes. Oh, it's bad. I'm playing Tyler Celedino right now.
Tyler Salad.
Yeah, him and his mustache are like 1-for-13 over the last 2 weeks. So great stuff there. What are we on now? Lucas Sims. Van, what do you think about the Sims?
I wish that he had his own barbecue joint that I could go eat at because I really like Lucas Sims. It's a Billy Sims barbecue reference for those out there. Do you guys have those where you live?
No.
It's basically a barbecue restaurant from the old football player, Billy Sims. Billy Sims barbecue. So that joke kind of fell flat, but you get the gist of it.
It would have been better if you had mentioned country breakfast going into cahoots.
Like teaming up and doing it.
Chipping into the business.
Well, we know Billy Butler sure isn't going to be playing baseball much, so yeah, he might as well get in the food industry. I like Sims. I like Sims probably more than I should. We kind of discussed on the other podcast that he's probably going to profile as a number three starter at best, but he made a huge leap forward, if you will, in the walks per nine and kind of cut it in half this year in the minor leagues. He was at 2.91, and that's been his big Achilles heel is he just walks too many guys. The command has not been there. It's been there. And his first start up, he pitched 6 innings, didn't walk anybody, struck out, I think, 5, only gave up 2 runs. So there's some potential here. Maybe this really is a turn the corner and he's kind of figured it out with his mechanics. He's what, 23? So it's entirely possible. He just kind of grew into his own body and he'll be in good shape. I'm, like I said, a little more optimistic than I probably should be, but I still think at worst, you're going to get some decent strikeouts out of the guy.
Yeah, holy crap, was he bad a few years ago in the minors? Because I wrote about him a couple weeks ago in On Deck Circle in my many writings about the Braves farm system. It seems like I write about them every week, but they have so many guys that are so good. But I think, yeah, I mean, when you look at the 6% walk rate that he's kind of cut down on this year a little bit, and you know, it's one of those things, too, that if he can get the mechanics figured out, that was the big negative against him because he was solid and then he had that 1 year that was kind of hopefully just kind of an abnormality, I guess. But overall, I think, yeah, he could be a guy that could be a middle of the rotation guy, and in a deeper league, definitely he's somebody I would look at. You know, because one of the things that we talk about these farm systems and we talk about them being so loaded, you know, I always compare, it seems like I compare the Braves with the A's a lot because it seems like they grow these pitchers on trees. And it's not so much that they come up and they're frontline starters, but it seems like they always have another guy ready to step up and give you a spot starter, come up for a couple of weeks and they can develop these guys pretty well. They have kind of a track record of that just as an organization. So he's one of the guys I think that's kind of at the forefront though, and he's taking a big step. I believe he was a first round pick as well. So he's got the pedigree and the chops, and yeah, I think he could be good. The XFIP's not a huge fan of him. You know, it's kind of high, but overall, I think he's somebody you could grab in a deeper league that is worth a flyer, I think.
I would be definitely checking him out in, you know, 14, 15, 16 team mixers and obviously anything deeper than that, but I think he's more of a spot starter. Yeah, as far as 10 and 12 team leagues, those mechanics can get out of whack at a moment's notice, and that kind of leads to a volatile profile for me. And so at least if you're doing the streaming thing with him, at least prepare yourself for a blowout. But yeah, if he can maintain that walk rate, he could be really, really good, because that curveball is very good. He can, you know, start off the count with it. He can get it over for strikes, and he can just have batters flailing away at it. So that is going to be his calling card to success. Long term, I don't know. He might even be a reliever if he regresses in the walks, and and that the third pitch changeup is just average, and cutter isn't anything great either. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm very excited to watch him as the season rolls along. I'm rooting for him because I drafted him in one of my dynasty leagues. I had since dropped him, of course, because he had been so god awfully bad, and of course now somebody else is reaping the rewards because they actually saw that he was having a good year before I did. So all the best to him. We'll have to monitor how he does. But let's take a break here, guys, and then we're going to come back and talk about the rash of trades that happened at the deadline.
Nasty. No
more. You're listening to the BGFS Network, where we keep fantasy real.
Welcome to Tradesville. We are ready to discuss the trade deadline moves that actually went down over this past week. It was, I don't know what you guys think, but I was kind of let down. I actually thought there would be a little bit more action than there was.
No, but if you think about it, though, like compared to last year, there were a lot more big names that were moved this year.
And it was like the last maybe like hour that was really, you know, because some years I'll watch on like MLB Network, or I had it on the XM radio, and you get bored to death because nothing happens. But, you know, it kind of led up to that last hour with Gray going and then Darvish going at the last minute. I'll say it was better than I thought it was going to be, because with all the big names that were being thrown out there, I didn't think very many of them would move. And I wasn't sold that Darvish or Gray were going to go anywhere. So I was glad to see something go down that was worthwhile. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was mostly those two were like the big ones. There are some big bullpen pieces that moved, and then Lucas Duda, we'll get to him. But yeah, overall, I guess I just thought that with the changes to the CBA and the qualifying offers and all that changing, that maybe we'd see a lot more guys moving when there's really not as big a reason for teams to keep guys around. Was not to be. Yeah, a lot of these came through like after the deadline, seemingly. Like Darvish, I think that was announced after the deadline had already passed. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's interesting to say the least. But let's start off, Ron, with the Sonny Gray deal that we just mentioned. He is now going to wear pinstripes, and the Yankees sent out to Oakland for Sonny Gray James Caprillion, Jorge Mateo, and Dustin Fowler. So Sonny Gray, as far as his value, you think it's up, down, or the same moving to the Bronx?
I think it's up a little bit. I mean, he's got a better offense behind him. I think both sides did really well here. And I'm a guy that invested in Sonny Gray a little bit before the season started, so I like the season that he's having. I think he'll be fine there. I think it's a great move for the Yankees. I mean, they didn't give up any of their big heavy hitters as far as prospects. On the season, you know, Sonny Gray's got the 3.43 ERA, so he's looking pretty good. He's looking a lot better than he did in 2016, I'll say. When I look at the Yankees side of it, I like what they gave up. When you look at the A's side of it, they're stock in the farm system, and they're not at the level of the White Sox, not at the level of the Braves, but they do have a pretty impressive young stable of players here, and they got a couple of guys here that they're going to have to wait on a little bit. We know about Dustin Fowler coming up and injuring himself in the first half inning of his career, didn't even get in at bat. Jorge Mateo is a guy that I'm kind of meh, you know, whatever. I mean, he's okay, fast, not really good at anything else. He's average at about everything else. I think the wild card here really, though, is James Caprillion, who is currently recovering from Tommy John surgery. I actually wrote about him in the On Deck Circle this week over at BGFS. And he's a guy that you don't really know necessarily what you're getting, because he has only pitched in his couple of seasons in the minors. He's only pitched a little over 27 innings, because I think last year he had a forearm issue, I want to say. And then, like I said, he's recovering from the Tommy John this year. But he was kind of – I can't remember if it was Ken Rosenthal or John Heyman where I read this. So I want to give the credit where it's due to one of those guys. That Kaprielian was kind of the compromise piece, because the A's were pushing awfully hard to get Florial. And Estevan Florial, and they didn't want to put him in there. So Kaprielian was the piece that kind of said, okay, we'll take Kaprielian, we'll take Mateo instead of Florial. So they were able to keep him, because I think the Yankees, I've read a couple places where they like him a little bit better than Jorge Mateo, and I don't blame them at all. I like him more than Mateo as well. So I think that both sides did really well. If the A's can develop these guys, and they can afford to wait on them, they can afford for Fowler to come back fully healthy, they can afford for Mateo to take a little bit longer in the minors, and they can afford for Kaprielian to really recover from the Tommy John and get fully healthy and come back. So overall, I like it for both sides, but I think it helps Sonny Gray. And a lot of times, too, just simply, I think it's underrated that a change of scenery will do these guys really well. I mean, I think that's something, you know, you look at, we'll talk about Lucas Duda in a second, but I think that's a case of Lucas Duda going somewhere else and thriving. So overall, I like the deal for both sides. I think they both did really well for themselves and got things that they needed. And the A's got something for Sonny Gray, because obviously we know that, you know, the A's with the small market model that they have, they're not going to re-sign these guys. So they did really well for themselves, and they're building a nice little core with what they got going on in Oakland in the minors.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm looking at Sonny Gray's numbers now, and I'm okay with what he's doing now. A month ago, when he had a 2.8 ERA and like a 10 K per nine, I didn't believe that for 1 minute. He's never was a strikeout guy. Now, it's up. It's 8.72 versus his career of like 7.5. And that's okay simply because the good pitchers' K per nine is up. Strikeouts are up across the board. So maybe that's legit and can hold. He's got a 3.43 ERA. That's fine. I don't think of him as a 2.5 to 3 ERA pitcher, but a 3.5 ERA pitcher is fine. I completely believe he can continue to do that. And I think that the return that Oakland got for him really reflects that. They didn't get Clint Frazier. They didn't get the other guy they were asking for. They got good pieces, or pieces that can develop into something worthwhile, but they didn't get the elite return. And I think that's perfect, because that's really what Sonny Gray should be valued at. So this is a good deal for both teams. The Yankees need starters. They've already announced they're going to go with a 6-man rotation for arguably the rest of the season, which is probably the right thing to do. Keeps your guys fresh, you know, and just makes it to where they'll put themselves in a good position for the postseason. So I'm pretty cool with this trade for both sides.
Well, I'm sure they'll be glad to hear that.
They will be.
Yeah, I think overall, I guess I would say, because I live in quality start leagues, I play in quality start leagues, that I would say that Sonny Gray's value is down a little bit, just because you're getting a huge ballpark downgrade, and pitching in the AL East is hard for pitchers, to say the least. And then, you know, the real benefit is you're pitching for a much better team. You should be in line for a lot more wins, certainly, than pitching for the A's. But like I said, I play in a lot of quality starts leagues, so that doesn't really matter for me. But I've been off the Gray train for a while, so I don't think it's necessarily any reason to worry about him or anything like that. So it's close to a wash, but I would say value down a little bit. But Yu Darvish, man, he went to the Dodgers. I just saw him warming up for his first start. Just a few minutes ago, it looks weird seeing him in Dodger blue, but that's how it is. He went out to the Dodgers in exchange for Willie Calhoun, AJ Alexi, and Brandon Davis. So what do you think about Darvish's value?
Yeah, this was, like Ron said, kind of the last-minute trade that happened. I think it was released after the trade deadline that it had been agreed upon. And I think it's a good trade for both teams, to be honest. The Rangers are out of it, so they've got some pieces, which I'll let Ron talk about in a sec. And the Dodgers got Darvish. They got an ace. And I know he's been, I don't know, his numbers are a little bit down compared to what we might have expected, but he's still really good. He still strikes out a lot of batters. And there was a report that came out that said something along the lines of the Dodgers feeling more confident about getting Shohei Ohtani next season through the posting service now that they've signed Darvish. Now, Darvish is only signed for this year, but maybe that says to Ohtani that, you know, they're willing to play with these Japanese-born pitchers. I don't know. I can only surmise if that report was even real. But I do like it for the Dodgers. I mean, they're going to be in the postseason no matter what. They could play under 500 the rest of the season and still win 100 games almost. So it really kind of shores up their rotation. Maybe if Kershaw has a few more issues, they don't have to rely on him as much. Either way, they got a really good starter for a good package.
And maybe it takes a little bit of the – maybe part of the problem, too, is Darvish has been good, but, you know, he's had a couple blow-ups here than there. Maybe it'll be good for him to not be the marquee guy in that rotation. I mean, I know Kershaw's on the DL right now, but it might be nice for him to not be – maybe be the second or third guy in that rotation. So when you look at the guys that got back, I think of all the prospects that got traded in the last couple of weeks or in his, you know, in these deals, I think Willie Calhoun's one of my favorites for what he profiles to do. He profiles very well on the fantasy side and not so much on the real baseball side because his defense isn't all that good. He's been playing primarily at second base. He's played a little bit of outfield, but he overall profiles as a guy that's going to be moved to the outfield permanently. But you got to like the power he gives you. He had 23 homers in AAA, really developed that the last couple of years. And the thing I like too with him is his strikeout rate is low. It's only around 12%. In the minors and in AAA this year, I should say. And then the walk rate is at 8.7%. So you got to like that. You got to like the 357 OBP. He's a guy that in yearly, if you got a room, you know, got room for him, I'd go out and get him. The other two guys to me really don't interest me at all yet. AJ Alexi, maybe a little bit just because his stuff profiles to be somewhat decent. He's only 19, so he's got a long way to go as far as being anything that's going to be up on the major league level. And then the third guy, Brandon Davis. Brandon Davis doesn't interest me at all, and we talked about this in the other podcast. I won't go too in-depth in him, but the two things that kind of jump out to me is, number one, the defense isn't very good at shortstop. He's probably going to be moved to third eventually, but he also has a whopping 39% strikeout rate. And that's not – you know, sometimes you look at these strikeout rates and then you look at the sample size and they only have about 50 at bats. He's got over 200 at bats and he's still, or he might even have over 300, but he struck out 39% of the time. So he's got a long way to go. Could develop into something decent athletically, but overall, him and Alexi are guys that are light years away from being even a blip on your fantasy radar. But Willie Calhoun is a guy that I really like.
Interested to see come the end of the season if the Dodgers do decide to extend Yu Darvish or re-sign him in hopes to perhaps woo Shohei Ohtani. But I don't even know if Ohtani's going to sign at this point. He's missed most of the season due to injury. I think he's barely played at all. So I don't know if clubs would become a little bit more hesitant to give him a shot. You got to think that his track record speaks for itself, but I'm definitely going to be monitoring that situation in the off season. But Ron, we'll stick with you. What about Lucas Duda to the Rays? You like his value?
I do, and it was one of those ones that I kind of looked at it because I think of Logan Morrison as profiling kind of the same as Lucas Duda. But I, you know, being a Rays fan, I kind of looked at it a little bit deeper, and it's kind of a classic Rays move just because they seem to really like these veteran players that either become waiver wire targets or guys that they can add in trades and do something with as far as plugging them in the lineup, moving them around. It kind of reminded me a few years ago when they traded for Steve Pierce, and Steve Pierce came to Tampa and was on fire and had a great season and parlayed that into a free agent deal the following offseason. So far, so good. I mean, he's got a hit in every game. He's got three home runs. I think he's played in, like, I want to say five games so far. But it makes sense, and they didn't give up much to get him. Reliever Drew Smith, which honestly is not a guy that I don't believe is high up in the organization. I honestly don't know a whole lot about him, but it's a classic Rays move. You know, you look at what they do and they try to add guys that are smart adds that they're going to get the most for their money. And I think they did that with Duda. So far so good as he's hit well. And I mentioned earlier when we talked about Sonny Gray too, you know, and it could be the same with Lou Darvish, Yu Darvish as well. Just a change of scenery.
His cousin.
Yeah, it's his Italian cousin. it's going to be good for him, I think, just to have a different place to play, because they're also not in it as well. I mean, they could very well make a run at the wild card. I don't know if the division is within reach, but they could make a nice little wild card run here. And I think that has to be exciting as a player. I mean, obviously that's not something that I will ever know, but when you go from a situation like the Mets, who are going nowhere, to a situation like Tampa, where they could, you know, get a little rally going and be in the postseason, it's got to be kind of exciting for a player. So I think that's good for him as well. But I like it as a classic Rays move.
It is, and I think Lucas Duda is criminally underrated. He's been really good this season when he's been playing. So I think it's a good move anytime you can help shore up your offense. And, you know, going into the season, the Rays weren't considered to have a really good offense. Now they've gotten performances out of Logan Morrison and a couple other guys. Of course, Brad Miller's sucked, so maybe he can get a little better and even improve the offense a little more. But it's a good move for them, and I really hope they make the postseason. That's a fun team to watch.
I always kind of root for the Rays just because of
DJ, you know,
they're such a small what?
Because of DJ Kitty.
DJ Kitty.
You don't know what DJ Kitty is?
That's not it's not really why, but
they did give the giveaway. I don't know if it was last, I think it was a Sunday before last, they did give away an adult sized DJ Kid onesie.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so you have to check that out.
I'd wear that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you can find one on eBay.
I'm wearing a onesie now. I mean, is anyone surprised?
I actually think of you as a Zero Z guy.
No, that's Nate.
Sorry.
I like the flap, to be honest.
I got my nude podcast host mixed up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I could fit that over my JNCO jeans, too.
Good.
I like this. It's a perfect fit. It's because a player like Duda, while he's criminally underrated in the fantasy realm, in real life, that's the type of player that right now is plentiful and very cheap to acquire. So it was a good fit for them. I'm always rooting for the Royals, or not the Royals, the Rays, because there's, much different scenarios. But yeah, no, the small market teams, I always sort of pull for them. Kind of like the A's too. Billy Bean, overrated, but at the same time, I still root for the small market teams just because the odds are stacked against them. And I won't say anything more on Lucas Duda because I've been singing his praises for months now. So we shall move on to the Mets, who have acquired AJ Ramos and also sent Addison Reed to the Red Sox. So, Van, does that bullpen sort of, has it already figured itself out as far as who will be getting the saves there?
I think it has and does. I mean, Ramos is a closer, and a lot of people kind of decreed this trade at the beginning. It's like, why would they even bother? They're not in it, except Ramos is signed for next year. So they plan to compete, so why not? I think it was a fine trade. They didn't give a whole lot up for him. Reed was only signed through this season, so they traded him to the Red Sox. I think it was a smart move, and I think they're both good pitchers. Reed's had a pretty good season, and Ramos has had a good season, though there have been some mixed results at times. I think both pitchers are going to continue to be really good, and I think these are fine moves for both teams.
Yeah, I agree, and it seems too, and I don't know if I just maybe it hasn't been the level of bullpen arms dealt before, but it seems like all the cool kids this year were getting bullpen arms as far as at the trade deadline. That was the thing to do. So it does on paper look like a lateral move, but like Van said, you know, I think it does speak to the fact that they think that they can put something out on the field that can compete next year as far as, you know, having Ahmed Rosario up. They might call up Dominic Smith. You know, they got Conforto. Jay Bruce is in the fold. So they have pieces that they could make a nice little run in that division. They just need to stay healthy. If their pitching can stay healthy, if Thor can stay on the field. Ramos is a guy that's he's had a nice season, and he could be a decent closer for them. So I think overall it makes sense. I mean, anytime you can add for the Red Sox, you know, anytime you can add a reliever that's a proven closer, that's a proven guy that can handle the pressure situations, I think you got to go out and do that. Now, fantasy, it definitely hurts you a little bit just for the simple fact that, you hate the trade deadline. You like it, but you hate it depending upon who gets dealt, because, you know, we talk about chasing saves all the time, and all of a sudden, you know, you might invest that high draft pick, or you might invest, you know, money in your auction in a guy that's a closer, and all of a sudden during the trade deadline he gets dealt, and you all of a sudden don't have those saves anymore. They just kind of vanish. When you look at that, I think that's kind of frustrating if you had Addison Reed for some saves. But it appears at this point, you know, Juris Familia is kind of a guy that we forget to talk about as well, because we don't really know what's going to go on with him. I don't think that anytime you have a blood clot anywhere in your body, it's going to be a thing that's going to be favorable for you to come back from. So that's a guy too you got to think about as far as where he's going to slot in the future, if he's going to be healthy or not, because it's been rumored that he's trying to come back, and I don't know really for what reason they would push him back this year. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out in the offseason, whether it's Familia or whether it's Ramos that gets a ninth inning role heading into next season.
And, you know, to add a little fire to that too, Familia has the off-field issues as well. We've had some trouble there. So I wonder if, because Ramos can do the job, that they don't just say, let's make Ramos the face of the closer role and then just use Familia elsewhere. The other argument you can use is Familia is so good, you can use him in the matchups. So maybe he's better to be free to pitch the seventh or eighth inning. I don't know. That's a situation to monitor in the offseason for sure.
Yeah,
it says he potentially could be back in mid-August if everything goes right with rehab. But it seems like they pushed him back a few times as well, and I don't know really what sense it makes for them to bring him back at all.
Mm-hmm. I think it makes for a stash at least.
Yeah,
if you got a spot for him on your DL, I would lean towards probably Familia keeping the job heading into next year, just because Ramos has been sort of erratic with his control, a little bit of a more tumultuous ride with him, but. You know, we're still chasing saves in Miami, and we had Brad Ziegler get his first save of the season just the other day, so he appears to be the guy who's going to lock down saves there, but he's been horrible this year. He was, I think if you go back and listen to our closer preview, he was one of, maybe he was even my number one closer handcuff coming into the year, and thankfully he didn't start really sucking until I had already dropped him everywhere. But he has a 6.30 ERA on the year, and over 30 innings, he's got 17 strikeouts and 13 walks. So really, if you guys are chasing saves, at what point do you sort of just avoid him, or does he cross that line at all for you guys? Like, do the negatives outweigh the saves that he'll get you the rest of the way?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say, because, you know, when we look at a lot of these bullpens, I don't know necessarily if there's a at this point in the season, I don't know if you're going to be getting to chase a lot of saves. And Ziegler's a guy that, I mean, yeah, if you don't have to give much to get him, go grab him. But I don't know necessarily if he's a guy that I would go out and try to get. And some of these bullpen situations, it seems like this year, more than any, there's a lot of messy, you know, kind of
horrible, you know, options now.
Yeah, and it seems like there's like five or six teams that we talk about every week that is just, you know, you they're awful. And so I don't know. I mean, we talk about Kyle Barraclough. He's a guy that you keep wanting to go after and try to get. But I don't know if I really want anything to do with anybody in Miami's bullpen as far as saves. I mean, you know, you look at the progression. You know, you got Junichi Tozawa, who hasn't been great. You've got, you know, Barraclough is hurt. So I don't know. I mean, I guess Ziegler is just kind of the guy by default, because he does have some closer experience and he's okay. But I don't know. I don't necessarily know if it's really worth going after at this point.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. And I do want to give a shout out to Brad Ziegler as my fellow Missouri State University alum. But he's been really bad. So there's very few points and times where I would think that this is a good idea. If you're five saves back from gaining a point or two, but you're also a full run ahead in ERA, maybe sure, give it a shot. But unless it's that big of a discrepancy, I'm probably just going to avoid it altogether.
Yeah, I think that's wise advice. Be sure to consult your standings and see what you have to gain and lose, because it is definitely a risky profile. Jeremy Hellickson, I guess maybe this doesn't even matter that much. He went to the Orioles in exchange for Hyun-Soo Kim. Ron, are you suddenly interested in Hellickson?
No, nothing says postseason run like Jeremy Hellickson and Tim Beckman at the trade deadline, man. That's on fire. No, I could care less. I mean, the Orioles staff is so bad. You know, with Ubaldo Jimenez, now Jeremy. I mean, Jeremy Hellickson has had his okay starts, but he's a spot start stream guy for me anyway. I couldn't be any less interested in Hyun-Soo Kim. And, you know, it's just the next two trades that we're going to talk about couldn't be any more boring for me as far as the guys that are involved. So, no, I have no interest in anybody involved in this trade whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm pretty much going to second that notion there. Hellickson is in a deep, deep, deep league. He'll get you some innings, but that's the extent of it. Kim, I've never been interested in. I know he walked in Korea when he came over, but he sure didn't do that here. So neither one of these guys are really on my radar. Now, I do happen to have Jeremy Hellickson in the prestigious Dynasty Baseball League, but that's also because I'm in dead last place, rebuilding, and just need a warm body to fill innings.
Yeah. I got a few nice starts for him in the middle of the season in the BGFS Dynasty Classic, and I've been hurting for pitching all year as far as for injuries. So he did get me a few starts in the middle of the season, but ever since he started to kind of trend downhill, I couldn't be any less interested. There's always guys on the waivers that are better options than him.
All right, so this other one that Ron said he has no interest in, man, Howie Kendrick, he's stolen 8 bases in 43 games. He's been on the DL for seemingly the entire season, but he was surprisingly stealing a lot of bags, and he's eligible at a lot of positions, but does this move to the Nats kill his value?
Maybe not kill his value, because I don't think he had a whole lot of value, but what it does is it shores up the Nationals, so it makes them, you know, have a little bit of flexibility with their roster. He really turned in a pretty good season so far this year. Last year was a bit of a disappointment, although he did steal 10 bases and hit 8 homers. He's basically become a really good utility player. Early on in his career, of course, he was an Angel. And as a prospect, there were people talking about, could he hit 400? I mean, he was that good. He never quite reached that potential. He never really quite reached any potential. He was solid to good, but never really became a superstar. And to be honest, now with the way he's being valued, I think he holds more value because he's a waiver guy that you can pick up and plug a hole with just to, you know, fill some spots and get some extra stats. And for that regard, sure, he's great. If you're in a super deep league and you need to throw somebody in for a utility spot, maybe he's facing a left-hander, there you go. It's fine, but it's not a guy I'm going to seek out. I think he's 34 now, so, I mean, we're in the twilight of his career.
Nothing to add, Ron?
No, I got nothing. Yeah, to me, Howie Kendrick, Howie Kendrick's a pretty boring name.
He was raised by his grandma. Did you know that?
Oh, well, I mean that. I mean, you know, he could be a nice guy. I mean, I'm not saying he's not. He couldn't be a quality person, and you know, somebody that you wouldn't want to idolize and grow up to be. I mean, you know, he is a big league ball player. He has had a solid career, kind of like you alluded to there. But fantasy wise, no, I couldn't. I don't really have any interest there.
Well, he also married his high school sweetheart, so it's great that you hate Howie Kendrick so much.
No, I spoke of him highly as a person. You know.
It's a fantasy
podcast fan. It's a fantasy podcast.
Well, maybe your fantasy is owning Jaime Garcia, who got traded to the Rockies after a quasi-baseline quality start with Minnesota. For one entire start, he was a Twin, and now he's with the Yankees. So any value at all with him? Are you interested, Ron?
I mean, maybe a really deep league if I needed, like we were kind of talking about Hellickson before. But I think he's going to be a better real-life acquisition for New York than he will be a fantasy one, because Van alluded to earlier, they're going to go with a 6-man rotation. To me, he fits that perfectly, where he fits in that as that sixth guy. And he's not been awful, but he's another case of kind of just a guy that's out there that, I mean, he's not doing anything great. He's always that injury risk as well. So, you know, I know you're disappointed, Nate, that he only was a Twin for about a week. I know you were fired up about them getting him. So,
oh yeah, I was so stoked.
Yeah, I know you were on MLB.com ordering a jersey, and they discontinued him real quick. So yeah, he's just kind of a guy. I mean, if you need somebody to in a nice spot as maybe a spot start possibly, but not terrible, not great, just kind of middle of the road for me.
You know, I think almost more importantly, because I don't think he's going to be that important as far as fantasy goes, did you guys hear that Brian Dozier was very critical of the trade that sent him away?
No.
Yeah.
I did not.
Yeah, I'll quote him here. That's frustrating within itself to not go all in on a little run. A couple of games could have gone differently. We really should be adding players, and it's super frustrating.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know about that. I think that's what you kind of want to get out of your players, and that's sort of the player, you know, that's what I would expect to hear from a player, but they're not the ones who need to look at this from a like financial and, you know, likelihood of outcomes point of view. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. they're not going to the World Series this year or anything. It was kind of ironic that one week they're buying and then the next week they lose like 5 games in a row or whatever. And like, okay, we're going to sell this guy that we just bought. But, you know, it's Jaime Garcia, so he's not worth much. So it's like you're buying and selling him for pocket change. So, yeah, it's kind of whatever. It's
too bad for Brian Dozier. It is worth pointing out that Jaime Garcia won 100% of his starts for the Twins.
So that is true.
His win-loss record is amazing as a Minnesota baseball player. Yeah.
Hall of Fame.
So you might as well go ahead and get that jersey.
Yeah.
I will. Yeah, you know what? I went to MLB.com to order that, and there's a pop-up window that came up. It just had seriously with a question mark on it.
Are you sure you want to do this?
The browser crashed. Yeah.
Yeah. I committed suicide. Well, speaking of the Twins, Brandon Kinsler was traded to the Nationals, also for some pocket change, a guy named Tyler Watson, and some international cash. So, Van, who closes now in Minnesota?
Well, I think Molitor already came out and said that it's going to be a committee. Rogers could do it. I think Matt Belisle has at least some experience, and he's a veteran presence in the clubhouse. Hildenberger might do it. It's kind of a not Minnesota. Well, it is Minnesota. It's kind of a Florida-style thing. Like, I'm probably going to avoid the situation, though it's not as bad as what I think is in Florida, because I think Rogers can be better than, you know, Brad Ziegler can be. I think the important thing to note in this is that if he gets back to being healthy, Glenn Perkins is going to close again next year. So that's really the guy to own if you're in a dynasty league. Redraft league, I'm pretty much just going to avoid this situation.
I think when we talk about these bullpens, one of the things I've learned this year that I'm going to do is I'm going to, when I'm chasing saves or a trade like this happens and we're not sure who the closer is, I'm going to go find a beat writer. In this case, it's Lavelle Neal III that's writing for the Twins. And I'm going to read their column, and I'm going to count how many names are mentioned as being the potential closer. Because when I look at his column, I think there's four names here that are given as, that could see save chances. To me, it's kind of like the old adage, you know, in college football, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. If you have five potential closers, you really don't have a closer. So I don't think it's something that I don't have a lot of confidence in any of the names there. And it's something I'm not going to try to play and figure out. And obviously, you can't have all five guys on your roster. And so it's another one that I'm just going to avoid because there's so many names being mentioned. And he, you know, he's even quoted as saying that there isn't one guy to even take it over. There's not even a closer candidate in that bullpen. So that tells me that it's kind of troublesome. So no thanks. I'm going to pass.
I wrote about this. I had Fantastics reporting the night of the trade deadline, and I suspected that it might be Matt Belisle who gets the first crack. His numbers on the season are pretty poor, but he had an incredible July. He didn't allow a run over, like, I think it was like 12.2 innings in July, and if memory serves me, it was 13 strikeouts and one walk. So whatever was ailing him earlier in the season, he seems to have that ironed out, and Rodgers has been just awful. As of the time I wrote it up, he allowed allowed runs in each of his last five outings, I believe is what it was. So I have been picking up Belisle for like pennies in all my leagues. So I hope it's him. If not, it will, just be a cluster. But I am excited to watch that disaster of a bullpen. But more importantly, this weekend, because I'm going to a couple Twins games on both Friday and Saturday. Because Saturday is that baseball prospectus event at Target Field that I'm pretty stoked for. But I get to watch Big Sexy on the mound on Thursday against the Rangers.
Ooh, that's worth it alone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I am so excited, you guys.
I watched him pitch when he was an Angel. He came to Kansas City. And in that game, the thing I remember the most is that Rob Quinlan hit a home run. And that's kind of, and you guys are going, what? The whole moral of the story is that that's what's exciting about baseball is if you've watched enough of it, you remember these no-name utility guys, and they leave an impact on you. So Rob Quinlan with his home run, or Jeff DeVannon, who hit for a cycle for the Angels, these are the names that are funny and exciting to me to remember because they're just nobodies for the most part.
Yeah. There's to kind of piggyback on that, the one funny, like, random story I have as far as those utility-type guys that you remember if you're a fan of that team is Jason Bartlett is one for the Rays.
Yes.
Back in the World Series days. And I actually, when I lived in Naples, I actually was behind Jason Bartlett at Target Nipples? In the line one time.
Wow.
Yeah, randomly Jason Bartlett. So
he had a couple of decent seasons.
He did. I think he had an all-star season in there. if I remember right.
Well, that is fun. Naples and nipples are so close. I mean, there's a lot of nipple talk in this episode.
Not enough, to be honest, though.
Yeah, that's true.
There is no such thing as too much of it, I don't think.
I'm going to go ahead and agree with you on that one. And you can never have too much Melky Cabrera either. That's what the Royals were thinking as they sent A.J. Puckett and Andre Davis over to the White Sox for him. Ron, any change of value for Melky?
I mean, I think he profiles pretty well in that park. I think he was, you know, he was decent there the first time around. So he's a guy that's had a pretty solid season overall. And he's one that I've looked at in a couple of leagues, you know, deeper leagues, that he's actually been on my waiver wire, and I've needed an outfielder. So he's a guy that I've added. But overall, I think his value has been, depending upon what your needs are, pretty decent all year. So I like him. I don't think that Kansas City gave up a whole lot to get him. You know, that we've talked about them the last couple of weeks as far as they think that they're all in, you know, to make a little bit of a run here. And they made a couple of little sneaky moves. You know, we talked about the deal with the Padres last week that they did, and they added a couple of decent arms for the stretch. So I think he could be a guy that, you know, he hits well in that park. He's a decent bat. He's not going to hit it for a ton of power. He's not going to hit for a huge average, but he's overall going to be solid if you're needing something in your outfield. I was wanting to look up his ownership percentage here, because if I remember right, it doesn't seem like it's as high as it should be. He's only 56% owned in Yahoo, so that's something I thought was kind of surprising when you look at what he's doing. He's got 13 homers, 56 RBIs, 291 average. That's nice. So I mean, he's a nice guy to add if you need a couple of stats here and there, and if you have an injury down the stretch. But I like him.
He kind of feels like, to me, one of those guys that when somebody gets hurt, you can plug him in your lineup and it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get anything great, but you're also not going to be hurting because of it. And that's still how I feel about him. It's also worth noting that, you know, if his baseball career really tanks, he will still have that career in web design available, because he, you know, created that website that he fooled Major League Baseball with. So he's always got that to fall back on just in case something happens.
Well, I know you're always doing that, too. You're creating sites just to screw with people.
Yeah, exactly. You know, just in case I, you know, get myself in a really big lie and I want to get a way out of it, I just create a website. That's how you do it.
It's pretty smart, really.
Savvy. We had Jonathan Lucroy shipped out to the Rockies for a good old player to be named later. My, how the mighty have fallen. Lucroy. I mean, if you had told me that this was going to be happening a year ago, Lucroy to the Rockies for a player to be named later, I would have laughed you out of the room. But, Van, here we are. So, value up going to Colorado?
I think it has to be, just because he's a hitter going to Colorado. That said, I want no part of Jonathan Lucroy, and I'm going to have to bring it up again. But do you remember when we talked about people who said it was okay to take Jonathan Lucroy over Buster Posey? I'm telling you, you're crazy, because Buster Posey's really good. Lucroy was fine. I wouldn't have expected this much of a drop-off. But, yeah, it's been not pretty for him. So I think going to the Rockies means maybe he'll hit a couple more home runs, but it's not going to be that much more. But I don't know. I'm going to avoid him. I don't think he really ever comes back to what he could be. He's also 31 and a catcher, so he's really off my radar.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, to me, when you look at the Rangers, and I'm not opposed to what they got for Yu Darvish. Like I said, I like Willie Calhoun a lot. But when you think of what they gave up to get Lucroy, Lewis mm-hmm. Brinson, yep. And now you're trading him for a guy that you don't even know who the hell you're getting back, is insane. So, I mean, it really looks bad on the Rangers front office as far as how they struck out on this one. And they let a couple of guys go that were big pieces for them. And like I said, Willie Calhoun's good. But, you know, when you're trading a guy that you gave up a top-level prospect for, and then some, they even gave up other players in addition to him. So it just really, to me, the biggest thing that I got out of this trade was, I mean, for the Rockies, why not throw a dart and see what you get? You know, if you get a good month out of him, it was well worth, you know, the player that you're going to name later that you don't know who it is. So it just looks really bad, reflects really badly on the Rangers front office, I think, more than anything out of this trade.
Yeah, in my NL only league, I will be picking up Lucroy because I'm basically, oh God, I can't even remember who I picked up to replace Devin Mesoraco when he went on the DL last time. So that's the sort of situation that I'm interested in Lucroy in, and really nothing else. Like, if you just need somebody who's going to be starting, then Jonathan Lucroy, he's your guy. So a couple more to get through, and then we'll get here. We got the Cubs. This is a pretty big one, getting Justin Wilson and Alex Avila in exchange for Jaimer Candelario, which is one of my favorite names in all of baseball, Isaac Paredes, and either a player to be named later or Kish. So let's see, Ron, what do you think? Let's talk about the Detroit bullpen now. We actually had Shane Green record a save just today. So is he the guy to own moving forward?
I think so. I mean, you know, I'm using my litmus test here, and I'm reading the beat writer article, and I see only Shane Green mentioned. So that gives me a little bit of confidence as far as not seeing 25 names in there. His numbers are decent. I mean, he's got a 2.59 ERA, 53-27 strikeout to walk ratio, and he, you know, like you mentioned, he has converted a couple of save chances here. So I think he's the guy. He hasn't really done anything yet to warrant any controversy. I mean, you look at his last handful of outings, they're pretty solid. He hasn't allowed a run for a while. So I think he's definitely a guy that I would go after. I like him a lot more. I like this situation a heck of a lot more than I like the one in Minnesota or in Florida. So if Shane Green's out there, definitely go scoop him up, because he's looked solid so far in the couple of save chances he's converted. Hasn't allowed a hit. He walked two in his first time out, but didn't walk any the last time out. Hasn't allowed any runs. So I think he's a guy I'd go after. But yeah, I think Shane Green's definitely the guy there.
He is, and they've announced he is, and he's performed. So I think that's the guy, and I think he holds it for the rest of the season. Now, his walk rate's obscenely high. He's at 5.10 walk per nine. So if he blows up a couple of starts, maybe something happens. But I don't think that does happen. I think he pretty much closes out the season. Another player of note to watch is Joe Jimenez, who was called up, who is one of the few pitching prospects that is a reliever that I kind of have interest in, because he's that good. I mean, he's a really good relief pitching prospect. I think ultimately next year, I think it's Jimenez's job. Maybe Green has it for a couple of weeks, blows a couple saves, they switch Jimenez in. This is going to be his test these next couple of months. They'll see what they've got in him and see if it's worth switching into. But I do think Green has the job for the rest of the year, so that's the guy to own right now.
Yeah, I'm not too interested in anybody else. Bruce Rondon, I don't know how you spell that, but that's how I feel about him. He's just always getting pounded. I don't have a ton of confidence necessarily in Green. I believe the last time I checked, he had like a 43% hard contact rate and a ton of walks. So not great, but at the same time, not totally thrilled with anybody else in that bullpen either. Maybe Alex Wilson if I'm looking elsewhere. But yeah, Jimenez in dynasty leagues, I think Joe Jimenez, who did get called up, is a guy to hold on to possibly for even as early as next year. It sucks for Alex Avila and me, who owned him in the AL only league, because he is now in the NL and a backup. So I think that drops his value quite a bit. Either of you guys interested in James McCann now with more playing time?
Two catcher leagues, sure. I think mm-hmm. he's definitely got to have one catcher league. It's fringy. Maybe if you're desperate, he'll get a little more playing time and it'll work out, but not unless it's a two catcher league, really.
Yeah, if it's a one catcher league, it's got to be a deeper league. He's hitting, I mean, his average wouldn't kill you. I mean, he's hitting .251, and he does have 10 homers. He's not really known for producing a whole lot of stats, but there's a lot worse options out there, I guess. So yeah, two catcher league, definitely. He was probably already on your radar there anyway, but even in one catcher leagues, deeper league, if you need somebody, I think you could do a lot worse than James McCann at this point in the season.
All right, I'm just gonna roll these last two trades together and see if there's anything that you guys think is worth mentioning. Francisco Liriano to the Astros for Nori Aoki and Teoscar Hernandez. And Tim Beckham, which we mentioned before, going to the Orioles for right-handed pitcher Tobias Myers. So sounds like Liriano probably destined for the bullpen. Any kind of fantasy slants to glean from either of these trades?
The only guy that I have somewhat interest in is Teoscar Hernandez, and he's probably not going to get called up. So really not for a redraft league for this year. Dynasty, there's a little more to talk about there. But really, these are just two depth trades for both teams that just kind of work out. The Astros get a lefty for their bullpen that should work out. It'll be interesting to see how Liriano does in the bullpen. And the Orioles trade, I could care less about because I don't like either of these guys.
Yes, same here. The only one that I look at is being a Rays fan, Tim Beckham. It seemed like he was kind of starting to figure it out a little bit. Obviously not living up to the number one overall pick hype that surrounded him, but he's an expendable piece too. I mean, he's something they could have traded. And, if, you know, Liriano, and like Vance said, I am interested to see how Liriano contributes to that bullpen and if they ever entertain the idea of moving him into the rotation later on in the year. But yeah, overall, there's not much in either trade that really moves the needle either way.
Yeah, Liriano's still killing lefties. I wrote him up for Fantastics, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but yeah, still absolutely death against lefties. So I think you'll continue to see him at least as a loogie for a couple years in a bullpen somewhere. One bullpen that I want to touch on before we take off here, and maybe it has sorted itself out a little bit. We had the brass sort of saying that Jim Johnson and Aroldis Vizcaino are going to be sort of co-closers for the time being. Johnson has really struggled quite a bit lately. And just a few moments ago, we saw Aroldis Vizcaino shutting the door for a save. So I think pretty clearly the more interest is going to be in Vizcaino, but are you still holding on to Jim Johnson in hopes of a few saves down the stretch?
I honestly don't have him in one league at this point. So, I mean, you could. I mean, at this point, you know, like I said, we talk about however many of these bullpens are just a mess, and he is a guy that has had saves this year. He is a guy that has looked good at times. So I don't think you want to completely cut ties with him because I don't think it's a clear-cut thing there. But when you look at what they have in the bullpen, a guy that I kind of like is a little bit of a dark horse maybe that could pop up there is Jose Ramirez. He's a guy that I have in a couple of holds leagues where middle relievers are a little bit more apt to get you some points. He's got 41 strikeouts, 43 innings, 2.47 ERA. The whip's 1.05. So I like him across the board. So he's a guy that if you don't really have a chance to grab, if you don't already have Jim Johnson or have Aroldis Vizcaino or don't have a chance to get him and you want to have a piece of that bullpen, he's a guy that I really like his stuff that you could maybe sneak in and get and stash and maybe get a few saves here and there. I don't know if he'll take over the job, but he's definitely my favorite one of the guys in that Atlanta bullpen at this point.
You know, it's kind of an interesting situation too, because if you look at the numbers here, Vizcaino has the better ERA. He's at 2.63 versus Johnson's 4.09. However, FIP and XFIP don't like Vizcaino very much. He's at 3.82 and 4.08. And then Johnson, they do like. His X and FIP and XFIP are at 2.84, 3.37. So it's kind of weird that that's kind of how it's worked out. The one who on the surface is performing is Vizcaino. Excuse me. But the one who's performing, you know, with the underlying numbers is still Jim Johnson. And to be honest, they're both not walking very many. They're both striking out a lot. Vizcaino is giving up a few too many home runs. He's got a 1.19 home run per nine, whereas Johnson's at 0.61. So I think I'm going to hold on to Johnson just to see how it shakes out. I think the Braves want Vizcaino to take the role, but I don't necessarily know if he does. They tried it once before, and it just really didn't work out, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think I'd still be tenuously hanging on to Johnson as well. It's not like he's exactly destroying you, Bud Norris style. Like, good. Freaking Lord. I guess I forgot to mention that, but perhaps that bears mentioning. We got Cam Bedrosian watch out there in Anaheim. Unless you have anybody else to suggest, Van, since you're the Angels fan, anybody else that we should be looking at in that bullpen?
It's those two guys, and to be honest, well, particularly since Daniel, blank on his name, since the Angels traded him away, it's pretty much Bud Norris and Cam Bedrosian.
Oh, what, Hernandez?
Yeah, David Hernandez, that's it. And, you know, Norris, he gave up a couple of grand slams, but a couple of the hits in those innings were, you know, some soft hit balls, some walks. It wasn't as bad as you would think. And Bedrosian hasn't been as good as you would think. So I think they're going to give Norris a little more of a leash here. But ultimately, I do believe, just like with Vizcaino, they want Bedrosian to have the job. So maybe they make that move sooner than you would expect.
Very good. Well, I've got a lot of streaking to do, guys. We've run out of stuff to talk about. So, anything else that we want to get out before we wrap it up?
One thing for me, in case you haven't heard, Greg Holland apparently cut his finger in what's been quoted as a kitchen accident. So Greg Holland, watch out there for sure.
The old Matt Cain injury, cutting a sandwich fancy in triangles.
Yeah. Doesn't like that crust. Got to get it off of there.
Oh God. Did you guys ever have those Uncrustables?
They're disgusting.
the worst thing I've ever put in my mouth.
What, really?
By a slim margin.
We actually have a fancy Pampered Chef tool that you can make those with the bread.
Whoa. I didn't know we were talking to royalty here, Nate.
Well,
I guess so.
Yeah, it is gold plated.
Nice.
Gold plated. So.
Gold, yeah.
Just like my brassiere. Anyway, okay, we're out of here. Enough of this trade talk. We'll catch you next week. Until then, may the fantasy gods shine upon you.